Hey Pacer fans, I'm Miles Turner, and here's the Sideline Guys podcast.
Well, today is an extremely significant day. It's the start of the NBA season. It's the final day before Pacers basketball matters for months to come. It's the first day that Miles Turner gets to wake up with a whole lot of more money coming in his back pocket, and you and I even survive flu shot day. So a lot of positive things. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. As we get ready for the regular season, the Pacers opener starts on Wednesday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. NBA basketball here today, and plenty of storylines to go with it, especially the Pacers really making the major news yesterday.
I'm going to put survive flu shot day in air quotes because
we're not there
my
yet.
Monday night was a waste. I was complaining via text, and then I said, what am I doing? Passing on my problems to everyone else. But, I didn't feel very good last night. But I woke up, just arms a little sore today, but I'm not sick, and I'm ready to go. And hopefully this means I will not be sick during the NBA season. It's also a big week because I'm on Instagram now.
Oh, wow.
Jeremiah Fox Sports Indiana, if you're interested. And I'm
spelled out.
Yes, spelled all the way out. Twitter is JJFS Indiana. When I set that account up, you could not have as many letters to Jeremiah Fox Sports Indiana. And I found maybe if you're searching for my name, it's hard to find if it's JJ. So
true.
I don't know that much about Instagram, and maybe in a future podcast we can have Pat and maybe have Ken Softman come in and help us have an Instagram tutorial. But I've posted a few things, and I've yet to announce this or let anyone know. So don't be, don't be laughing at me by my lack of followers at this point. I was hoping I'd have some, a body of work before I ask people to, jump in. So I'm hoping by the end of the week I can have a few more, and I'll try to not annoy you on Instagram, but maybe provide some additional information. But if I did not post this yesterday on Instagram, but I think many people did, the news about Miles Turner. And I think it is really good news, and I think that you probably said it best on Twitter, so I'll give you the credit. You posted a quote tweet after the @Pacers account posted the news with inked, and we've signed Miles Turner to a multi-year contract extension. I mean, I think your bullet points are all spot on. Guarantees the Pacers pay what they want to, don't have to match another team's potentially higher offer, provides a ton of confidence for a young player, avoids contract distraction questions through the 2018-19 season, and you said, a reminder, Miles is only 22 years old. I'll probably try to remove that from the equation this season because I think for much of his career we've been reminding everyone of his age, and at this point now he's fourth year in the NBA. He's proven worthy of a second, major contract. But the one I wanted to talk about is the second bullet point. Provides a ton of confidence for a young player. And in visiting with Miles, and if you saw the Pacers season preview show on Fox Sports Indiana, his offseason was not just about coming into camp so he could earn a contract, but he knew, his family knew, his support system knew that this was going to be an important season for the Pacers, an important season for Miles Turner. I think as he worked out in the summer, he had no assurances that there would be this deal before the season started. That being said, I'm sure he wanted one. I'm sure he wanted the long-term security, and I'm sure the team would have liked to have had, this kind of settled so they don't have to deal with the restricted free agency question in the next offseason. But I was worried a little bit that if the season started and he had a good game and then maybe, a not-so-good game, and then he would start to press. And I think he is someone who is very hard on himself, and that's just part of his personality. That's not anything disparaging, that he would start to press a little bit. He would start to worry, and then he would start to say, well, I've got to do better. And I think just removing that stress and pressure, he has that security, and now he can just, kind of have the weight lifted off of his shoulders. I think that's going to be huge for Miles this season.
I absolutely do, too. And that was actually, for me, maybe the biggest takeaway, and it maybe should have been bullet point number one, is that bullet points two and three in that tweet kind of flow together, and that, it would be very natural to get the kind of question, do you realize that your contract is potentially up at the end of the year, that you don't know who, what might happen in the off season. This gives a guy like Miles a ton of confidence, and I think Miles, more than maybe any player on this team, when he has confidence, it can directly impact his play as much as anybody. And you think about this from Miles' perspective, and you and I are not going to get super in-depth into the actual contract and the details for a couple of reasons. One, that's just not really our job. The Pacers don't disclose that information. So I think everybody saw the reports, and Woj is typically pretty accurate on these things, but we don't know for fact that Woj's report is the deal. But just from Woj's report, he's saying it's 4 years, $72 million. I mean, think about it from Miles' perspective and the Pacers' perspective. If you're Miles, you get that confidence. You know for 4 years you're going to get paid about this much money. And while he made a pretty good amount of money compared to the average person in his first 3 years, this is the one that really sets him up financially going forward. He's got that confidence from a financial standpoint. He's got a team that's saying, look, we want you around so much that right now we want to do this deal for the long term and not even wait to see what happens this year. And I think that gives him a ton of confidence. The city, obviously, I think, has reacted mostly positively to this. And from so you have all of that. And then you say from a Pacers perspective, you're signing a guy that I was looking this up. Depending on how the contract works, if it is correct, he might be somewhere between like 60th to 90th highest paid player next year. And if that's the case, I mean, you could say that Miles is worth that right now, even if he doesn't take a step forward. And I think everybody expects him to, and I think he will. But with the cap going up a couple of years ago, these kind of contracts now, they look significant and they look like big deals, but 16, 17, 18, whatever it is, million dollars a year is really not a ton of money in today's NBA. The salary cap is over $100 million. Miles Turner is only taking up about 15, 16% of that. And you've got somebody who I think is worth that money right now. And going forward, if he takes the steps that you hope he does, it could be a lot like a Victor Oladipo situation in that you've got a guy that all of a sudden is on a contract that you would consider a deal for the Pacers. I mean, Victor Oladipo right now at $21 million, that is a steal for where the Pacers are. And I think that's where you give both of these sides a lot of credit. Kevin Pritchard and company comes in and is able to come together with a deal that, you know, does not handicap the Pacers by any means. It secures up a guy who could be and hopefully is a pillar of this team for the next decade plus. And from Miles' perspective, after making a decent chunk of change in your first few years right out of school, you've got the stability both financially and from an organization that wants you here long term and is willing to put their stamp on that. And, you know, to kind of circle back to the beginning, the confidence that that brings a player like Miles, I think is really significant. And I really hope you see that on the floor, because when things go well for Miles and when he's in a positive state of mind, he really is the kind of player that could be, you know, posting all-star appearances and could be in that position. And again, you're right. This is year four for him, and the 22-year-old thing you got to be a little careful with, because you can't make that excuse for him forever. But when you look at what Victor Oladipo's career and how it transpired, I mean, remember, he didn't really take off until 25. We're talking about a 22-year-old. So I think this is really solid news for all parties, and I give Kevin Pritchard a ton of credit for getting this done before the deadline. I give Miles a ton of credit for not saying, I'm going to try to go out after every single potential dollar that I can in free agency. And I think this is an absolute win-win. And this is the kind of contract that, if it plays out in the right way for the Pacers, gives them a ton of flexibility down the line to acquire more players if necessary and if that's what they want to do.
And back to the pressure observation, explanation, if he would have signed a max contract, there are certain expectations that go with that. And not to say that Miles isn't worthy of that, but with this, you know, kind of team and player friendly deal, I feel like you don't have to worry about a bad game and saying he's not living up to the contract. I think it's interesting on NBA Twitter how players get identified as either being busts and worth the money or bargains. And it does change. But it pretty much, once a couple of name people identify you as being not worth the money, then everyone else just follows along. Let's think back to Victor Oladipo. Last offseason, when the Pacers acquired him, he was viewed as not just a average player, maybe non-superstar player, but he was viewed as a bad contract. And then now he's viewed as a bargain. Someone who's in the middle of an unusual situation right now is Andrew Wiggins. I think when the Timberwolves gave him his deal, it was kind of a no-brainer. Like, you had to sign Andrew Wiggins, you had to give him big money, and now he's, you know, identified as one of the worst contracts. With where Miles is right now, as the reports say, I think you don't have to worry about the back and forth there. I think it's pretty fair to think that he would be worthy of that contract. And I just look forward to Miles kind of having that youthful enthusiasm all season, because he should, right? he should be as happy as a kid in a candy store being on this team, having the comfort, having the endorsement that the team wants you and all of the people around him that he respects and admires. I mean, I think, you know, just everything he's done in the offseason, but everything he's done with his teammates, he's the guy who shows up. Everything he's done with the fans. Sunday night, he was here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse for the Miles Turner fan club section tryouts. He's a Pacer, and the Pacers want Miles, and it's great to see.
It's kind of funny because I was a little bit late walking out of practice yesterday, and I got off at the ground level as opposed to the tunnel, which connects the field house from the practice court. And I left on the ground level and was actually riding down the elevator with Miles. And at this point, had no idea anything was happening. And it's funny because then the Woj report only came out about an hour later. I was walking to Qdoba, and he was walking past Qdoba. So we were walking in the same direction for a couple of minutes and just generally chatting about the season ahead. And I remember walking into Qdoba thinking, man, he's in a good mood.
And I can only imagine what that mood would be like after that news or that contract.
Can you imagine? I mean, how cool it was, for example, you know, for you to get the official word that you were going to be moving into your role, you know, five seasons ago. And same for me, and the elation that you feel when that happens. And then
it's probably similar, though.
It is. And just to it's I'm sure he was, you know, walking there going like, man, you know, none of these people know that big news is about to break, and here I am. I'm going to be the center of it. So that was kind of a cool moment, you know, in hindsight to look back upon, because he was in such a good mood. And Miles, you know, he typically is in a pretty good mood. I think with everybody has their moments, but typically is in a pretty good mood. And how could you not be? And so, you know, I was going back and looking at some other contracts, for example, and look, Devin Booker's been fantastic, I think, since he was drafted by Phoenix, and I'm not making necessarily player comparisons, but you look at some of these other deals that are coming from that draft class. Devin Booker signed almost a $32 million a year deal for 5 years. He signed $5,158. Miles is on a $472, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. I mean, there are guys signing for huge dollars. Karl-Anthony Towns, again, an all-world player, is around $35 million a year, I think. So that gives perspective a little bit, that, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns, according to these reports, is going to be making $35 million a year, and the Pacers hopefully have Miles on a pretty affordable deal, but one that works to him as well. And so we got the opportunity after practice, of course. This was a major topic at hand, Miles and his new contract, and here's what the Pacers 22-year-old center had to say.
The first thing I did was celebrate my family. You know, they're the ones, they're a big, huge reason, you know, why I was here. You know, my parents, you know, my sister was back home at school, but I mean, a lot took to get to this point. You know, my teammates, you know, not just my teammates now, but, you know, my teammates when I first got in the league, teammates in high school, teammates in college, I mean, they all got me to this point. Trainers, coaches, and I can go down the list. There's a lot of people to thank, but it's very important for me to go into the season, you know, with a clear head, know that I can just play basketball and just, you know, do whatever it takes to help this team win.
How much confidence does it give you, one, to have this contract out of the way, but four-year deal, the money they're giving you? What kind of confidence does that give you?
It's a huge confidence boost, just to know how much the organization, you know, believes in my potential, believes in, you know, my skill set, and just believes in, you know, me as a person around this community. So, you know, I'm very excited we were able to both come to terms and both come to agreements. I mean, they've been talking about it for a long time, but, you know, they're showing me now. You know, that's what it all comes down to. You know, I know they have a lot of love for me and love for, you know, this team and, you know, what it can become. So, you know, it speaks volumes when, you know, you can actually see it in writing and see it in front of your face. So I mean, keeping a poker face now, keeping it calm, but it was a very emotional moment for me, man. I'm just, I mean, I couldn't be happier.
Miles in good spirits after practice on Tuesday, ready for the 2018-19 season. And Pat, a question that Nate McMillan is often asked, and I think over the weekend he kind of let out that maybe he's a little tired of answering, is whether Miles and Domas can play together. And with Miles really a part of the team's, you know, long-term plans, you have to think that at some point, you have to find out, and Kevin Pritchard has said as much, if Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner can play together. But I think to start the season, it's the dynamic, I think, between a fan base and a front office and putting a team together, and then a coach and a staff to try to do whatever they can to win games. I think to start this season, it's not as big a priority for Nate McMillan, and he kind of let that out on Saturday. Not that it's not something he's thinking about, but it's not the most important topic and question going into the season to him, even though it is such a big deal to so many others.
I think it's probably a question that they have to answer long term, but I don't think they have to answer it right now or even this season necessarily. And I think that's Nate's mindset. And McMillan, I think at this point everybody understands the challenge to that lineup's on the defensive end. On the offensive end, it could work flawlessly. Domantas Sabonis doing pick and rolls to the basket is very dynamic. And on the other end, Miles doing pick and pops around the perimeter is also a dynamic option. And to have both those guys on the floor at the same time could give the Pacers a ton of versatility. The biggest question is the elephant in the room as it relates to them playing together is how do they guard the four? And the stretch four, the athletic four, the three-point shooting four, and there's two options. One, it's Domantas Sabonis, who, he's a center, I think, by trade. I think Oklahoma City had him playing out there at the four a little bit, so that maybe gave people a misnomer when Domantas came over here as to what he played. He did that because, they had Steven Adams and Enes Kanter and no room for him in the post at the time in Oklahoma City, and he took a ton of threes, and while Domas can certainly hit the three, that's not his go-to game. The other option is putting Miles there, who maybe is a little bit better suited to guard stretch fours, but then you take away one of the league's better blockers away from the rim. That's the biggest challenge, and they played together less than 2 minutes in the preseason, and there was kind of, maybe a stereotypical moment when they did. Domantas was on Sam Decker. Decker got right by Domantas pretty easily, but Miles was right there to block his shot at the rim. Mark Monteith has done a couple stories on these, and they played together, I think, around 300 minutes last year, which over the course of the year is not a huge sample size. And the lineup did struggle a little bit. The Pacers were outscored their opponents by about 1 point per 100 possessions, or about minus 6 points with them on the floor. But you don't have to answer it right now. I think Nate, maybe has to get a little bit more creative with his lineups, and maybe they play together 4 or 5 minutes per game, and that gets Miles and Domas around the 30 that you'd like them to be at. Luckily, at this point, they are so young, and I think they are good in these roles, and they are unselfish players that I think Domantas is good in that spot. So this season, I'm not really concerned if those two aren't playing major minutes together, but it is a bigger picture storyline, especially now that Miles has this contract, that they have to decide, do they want Domantas being that sixth man who plays close to starters minutes, or do they want to try to figure out how to play him together?
And as you're building a team, don't you want assets? And at this point, you have control of Miles Turner. I'm not saying you do this deal because eventually you want to trade him or you sign Domantas Sabonis next offseason when a similar decision comes up because you want to trade him. But you have to have options. And if it comes a time where you have a chance to maybe get a player, you have to have someone, under a contract that maybe someone else wants. And so that's another thing that's perfect about this. If you wait till the offseason, someone offers Miles a restricted free agency contract and you don't match, you don't get anything. So at this point, I think that it's good. It's before the season. It's over. It's done with. Miles talks about it today. Nate talks about it again today. Nate, unfortunately, on the road especially, I think, will have to answer the Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis playing together question a lot. And he'll have to do it at home. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a big deal. I respect all of those that have talked so much about it because it's kind of obvious. It's two of your, really maybe three or four foundation pieces on this team, and they kind of play the same position. But let's just kind of let the season start and see if it starts like it did last year, and if Sabonis is okay coming off the bench but still playing 26 to 28 minutes a game, then why would anyone else have a problem with it?
I think so, too. And I think bigger picture, I think every guy wants to be a starter. They want to be the focal point. They want to be 35 minutes a game. But Domantas, I think, realizes he's still really young. He's in a good situation. He and Miles get along great. They were working out and training together in the offseason. I mean, how rare is that? A couple of young guys who potentially are battling for one spot, big picture, working out together and trying to lift each other up. And I think it takes a certain level of chemistry, a level of cohesion, and a level of just general intelligence and wanting a well-being for that other person to be able to pull that off. So the Pacers are absolutely in a situation where I don't see that as an issue this year, and maybe it's something they have to address bigger picture. And they'll, cross that bridge when they get there. And I think optimistically, you hope that that can work. Lineup together can work. Those guys, I mean, the positive is you almost always have one of those two guys on the floor, which is a really good thing. And, that kind of segues me into a bigger picture thought here of the rotation. I think this is something to watch really early on. The Pacers have all five starters back. I think Miles is going to be ready for the opener. Corey Joseph looked like he's going to be ready for the opener. So knock on wood, something happens between now and the opener, you've got your guys at full disposal. So where is the rotation? Who is in? Who is out? And I think it's more intriguing maybe this year than any other year, at least that I've been here, because for good reason, there are so many guys who could make a case they should be playing. The regular starting five, obviously. Then you say Corey Joseph is a sure-in. Domantas Sabonis is a sure-in. I think Tyreke Evans is a sure-in. At least to start the year, Doug McDermott has to be in that category too. And I think with what he's shown in camp that he's going to be a mainstay. You're already at nine guys. And Nate, in an ideal world, likes to go with a nine-man rotation, although is open to going with 10. And it seems like, I think, TJ Leaf is in that 10th spot if he does go with it. But we haven't named Kyle O'Quinn. We haven't named Aaron Holiday. We haven't named Edmund Sumner, who was fantastic in preseason. Alize Johnson, who showed a major spark in preseason as well. All of a sudden, you're up to 14 guys if you do that.
Yeah, but I think the one thing we have to make sure to put in perspective is the injury situation. And right now, maybe a couple of, you know, bumps and bruises and minor issues in the preseason, but I think they go into opening night with everyone healthy and ready to play. That won't happen all season. You'll have guys hurt. You'll have guys miss games. You need those players that are currently outside of the rotation to play. So I'm not worried about that, and I think all those guys you mentioned probably started training camp with an expectation or at least an understanding that there was a good chance maybe opening night they don't see any minutes. So I'm not at all worried about that. I'm more excited about, A, you start the same starting lineup from last season. I think I might, in the 24 to 48 hours before the season opener, do some research to see how many other teams are going to start the same starting lineup on opening night in 2018 as they did in 2017. Because I think, especially if you do that with a winning team, how beneficial is that? It's one thing if you won 28 games and you bring back the same starting lineup. You wouldn't want to do that, and you probably never would. But to have the same exact starting lineup, it means they can hit the ground running. And then to have a second unit that has some familiar faces, but your big acquisitions are going immediately into the second unit. I think people listen to me on, other podcasts, radio interviews. I did Channel 8 on Sunday. I'm just kind of overly enthusiastic, but these are the reasons why. I watch that second unit in practice, and they can compete with the starters, and the starters are a good starting five. So there's just so much to be excited about, especially if this team is healthy. Starters, second unit, how does Nate kind of mix everything together, and what's maybe as fascinating as anything, and I expect ratings to be up this season as well on Fox Sports Indiana, but to see what happens in the fourth quarter. Who plays? When do the substitutions get made?
I think that's, maybe the more important thing, too, is, and Mark Monteith always talks about this a lot, especially on a radio pregame show, it's not who starts, it's who finishes the game and where minutes, are divvied up. But to your point on the bench, and I'm taking the cautiously optimistic approach to start the season because, I want to see the bench perform how I think they can. But imagine your starting five in the NBA is something like this. Corey Joseph, Doug McDermott, Tyreke Evans, Domantas Sabonis, and either Kyle O'Quinn or TJ Leaf. That starting five's not winning you a title, but that starting five could compete, I think, with other starting fives. And that's not the Pacers' starting five.
It's just maybe missing a superstar.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put Vic with that group, then maybe you've got something.
Right. And that's, my point is that's your second unit.
Right.
And I think it competes with, I think that's better than a few Eastern conferences and a few Western conferences starting five. So that's where, you say you hope that the attack from the Pacers' perspective is relentless. When Victor Oladipo's off the floor, they still have Tyreke Evans. When Miles Turner's off the floor, they still have Domantas Sabonis. Corey Joseph, I think, very clear, there was little to any drop-off from Darren Collison to Corey Joseph. And I think also in that category is when Bojan Bogdanović leaves the floor now, you're not without a shooter, which was the case a lot of the time last year. Doug McDermott's on the floor. So that, to me, is the biggest story, one of the biggest storylines. That and the ability for Nate to have lineup flexibility. We talked about this on a previous podcast, so I don't want to go deep down that rabbit hole again. But you can go small with lineups that have Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Bojan Bogdanović, Doug McDermott, and Miles Turner. And all five of those guys are really good three-point shooters. Or you can have, in the lineups where other teams are going bigger with Jordan and Drummond and Blake Griffin, you can go with Miles and Domantas on the floor at the same time with Evans and Oladipo and Joseph and play a bigger lineup that's pretty good on the defensive end. So that line of flexibility is big, and I'm really excited to see that second unit because I think for the first time by no means did I think it was a weakness last year. I think it held up. But for the first time in a while, I think the Pacers bench is a significant strength. And I'm really excited to see them go against other second units that are not quite as, you know, stacked and lined up as the Pacers are.
And it does maybe not put pressure on, but it provides incentive to the starters. You have to perform. You know, you see some groups when the starters come out, they kind of walk to the bench, they're tired, and they're just kind of waiting to come back in. And sometimes they've got to make up for what their own reserves have done in the game. Well, the starters know they've got to play because they want to be on the court in the fourth quarter. So that'll be fun to watch. I think an interesting pick three is we'll not talk about the starters, or we will not talk about the bench guys, but we'll talk about the ones that maybe you might not even see hit the court on Wednesday, because coming off the preseason, you did have a chance to see some guys. I kind of actually thought you might even see more of, you know, some of the guys maybe headed to Fort Wayne than we did in the preseason, but with only the four preseason games, you want everyone that's a potentially NBA player to start the season to be able to play. But let's pick three guys that we could see make an impact, let's say in the first half of the season, that might not hit the court on Wednesday. And this isn't going to be a big breaking news kind of topic, because we kind of know who these three or maybe four guys might be, but I'll let you go first, Pat.
On one hand, I think there are guys that stand out for this, but also I struggle to think, like, who's my first choice. I think Kyle O'Quinn probably has the best chance of making a regular impact, just because I think he might be that first guy out of the rotation, but you know what he is. He's going to be a solid big. Whenever you need him, he's going to be there and ready. Edmund Sumner had a great preseason. I think Aaron Holiday had a really solid preseason.
Well, you can only pick one.
I know. That's why I'm struggling here.
Okay.
This might not be – like the odds-on favorite best pick, but I really liked what I saw from Alize Johnson. So I'm going to pick Alize Johnson, and I think part of that's going to be his length, his defending ability, and I think he's somebody that you could plug in right now. And look, we didn't even discuss Ben Moore in that group either, who did have a very brief stretch of playing in the Pacers rotation, I think a couple of games, and last year it was only for 5 or 6 minutes, but he's been on the Pacers floor before. But I'm going to go Alize Johnson. I think ultimately guys in this situation that have the advantage are ones that you can trust on the defensive end right away, and you don't necessarily need to make an impact on the offensive end. I think that's where Alize is, and he's such a good rebounder. And defense and rebounding, if you're solid in those positions, look, I think he's going to be a pretty good offensive player too. But right now he's got the defense and the rebounding at a pretty high level, and when you're there, then I think you – lend yourself to be more available right away. So I'm going to pick Alize Johnson. And by the way, I didn't even discuss EK in that discussion. And if he's healthy, he's a rebounder too. So
yeah, I don't know if there's more of a question mark or maybe a person of uncertainty heading into this entire season than EK, knowing, you know, when would be a situation he would get to play. Will he be in Fort Wayne getting some minutes? But just to counter Alize, I do think he's behind TJ Leaf in the rotation. So if TJ plays, I'm not sure he gets in. And then Kyle O'Quinn, you know, playing, I've seen him playing some four and some five both. So I do think he has a lot to learn in terms of the offense, the structure, just how the Pacers want to defend. This will be a learning experience for Alize. I kind of see him being someone who the first month or two maybe is here just kind of soaking everything in, and then get some Fort Wayne time to actually run the offense and defense, and then maybe mid-year he's ready to contribute if everyone stays healthy. I think the one that I guess seems kind of obvious, and in almost every interview that I've done in the last week and a half, someone's asked me about Edmund Sumner, the Born Ready 2 podcast.
I did that too. They got mad at me because I called him Born 2 Ready once. It's not Born 2 Ready. It's Born Ready 2.
Yeah, I don't know why I immediately thought Born 2 Ready.
I do that also.
They started the campaign Edmund Sumner for NBA MVP. So I told them that they probably should pump the brakes just a little bit.
G League MVP might be.
You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what the Pacers do with Edmund and how they handle him, because, you know, last season they had a two-way contract player in Alex Poitras, and this was basically injury necessitated, but he was with the team to start the year, quickly accumulated his 45 days with the NBA team, and then had to have that contract transferred to a regular contract. And you know, with Edmund, he's on a two-way deal. He agreed to that at the beginning of last season. I think he agreed to two-way deals because of the injury that he was coming off of. if Tyreek Evans, who hasn't been the most durable of players at times in his NBA career, if he gets dinged up, has to miss a game or two, I think Edmund is the perfect person to throw in there and immediately get some playing time. And the confidence that he gained from those preseason games, I even saw it in practice this week. It's crazy. Someone asked me, did you see this Edmund Sumner performance in the preseason coming? And I had to admit, I mean, I see a lot of things in practice that I kind of am not surprised by when I see it in the games. And I do thank, the staff for allowing me to watch a lot of the practices. But I was flabbergasted. And maybe it was just because I wasn't watching Edmund as much. But, you know, training camp, I didn't think that much of what he could do. I just kind of thought this could be a year he's the fourth point guard and he learns how to play the position, and maybe next year he challenges for a spot. But he's kind of a combo guard to me now, and if Tyreek's out, you play him at the two, you put him with that second unit, and the confidence that he has, I don't know, the way he attacks the basket, there is just a lot to like. And now you think back to when the Pacers, I think I can remember draft night, the Pacers got Edmund by buying the pick from New Orleans, I believe.
Yes, and Kevin Pritchard was already
in the
talking.
Middle, he was in the middle of his post-draft press conference when I think he got a text, or maybe he thought that there was a chance they could acquire Edmund, but at the time it kind of seemed like a throwaway. Like, oh, well, sure, you know.
And
you don't know what Edmund's going to become, but you see some flashes that he could be a real player. And to me, I think in the first two or three weeks, I would be very surprised if he doesn't at least some game, some situation, get some regular rotation minutes, and I think he can contribute.
No, I think so too. And that's I was going to go back to draft night as well, because the interpretation I got of all that, you know, Kevin Pritchard's up there, they're talking about the draft, his phone goes off. I think he even said, up, Peter made a deal or something like that. And it must have been a scenario where they had agreed, hey, if Edmund is still there.
They had to convince Herb to spend the money to buy the pick too.
Right.
That's something that you,
credit definitely goes in that direction also. But just think about, I was very surprised too, and maybe if maybe the coaching staff wasn't, maybe the managers weren't, because they're around the team and they saw this potentially breaking out. But think about Edmund. He's a late second round pick. If you go and look at the second round picks throughout the years, there's only a handful that really contribute, and most are in the first 5 to 10 picks of that second round. He's a late second round pick. He has an ACL tear. He isn't even able to really play until what, like
and
late
a shoulder
January.
Injury as well, right?
That he was did. Also I forgot about that. From? He did. He had a shoulder. He had an ACL. Can't even really play until late January. He's not at 100%, and I don't think blew anybody's doors off in Fort Wayne last year. Clearly, because he was, I think, in his words, about 60%. And then all of a sudden, this late second-round pick coming off an ACL looks great in the preseason, and he has the length, I think, to go with it. So he's maybe the most intriguing guy the Pacers have if you want to look into deep down the roster. I think watching him, and to your point, how do the Pacers manage Fort Wayne? Aaron Holiday, for example, has a couple great teachers in Corey Joseph and Darren Collison if they want to keep him here, but there's also a value to getting playing time. Edmund Sumner, that certainly fits. Alizé Johnson, I think, that fits. So how much do you keep him here learning but not taking on-court reps? How much do you want him in Fort Wayne getting those on-court reps? That's an interesting debate for people smarter than you or I.
Short list.
But everybody is a – it's a short list, and it only includes Kevin Pritchard and Peter Dinwiddie and Ted Buchanan and Nate McMillan
us,
and
yeah.
Dan Burke and Popeye Jones and
now you
really short
going.
List. Yeah.
All right. And the final pick three, let's make our combo pick. I think it's one of two people. It's Aaron Holiday or Kyle O'Quinn. I'm going to say as long as Corey Joseph is healthy, maybe we don't see Aaron Holiday for a while and Darren Collison stays healthy. Yeah, but I think there are going to be some minutes for Kyle O'Quinn, and I really like what I've seen from the addition of him, just kind of a locker room guy, the intensity he brings to practice, and being able to say, Nate likes a set rotation, but he can be flexible. And maybe there's a game he goes in for 7 minutes in the second quarter, and I think Kyle's suited for that. And I don't think he'll be satisfied. I think that every time he gets on the floor, he's going to try to make an impact to prove that he deserves more playing time. So I expect Kyle O'Quinn to make his presence felt early this season.
I think so, too. Last year, I'm looking at Al Jefferson's numbers, and people like to compare the two just because they're veterans and they're bigs and they're probably just slightly out of the rotation to begin the year. Jefferson played in 36 games for 13 minutes a game, so he got work. And I think Kyle is probably in a better position even than Al was, just because Al turned, you know, the game changed so quickly around Al that, you know, even though he was so good in the post and even though he was so solid on offense, you know, there was always the worry about him being able to get up and down the floor on the defensive end. I don't think that's a major worry for Kyle. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a stretch four or anything like that, but I think he can hit that shot out there if he needs to. And I think Kyle's somebody that can fit the current system that they have a little bit better than Al could. So I think Al played 36 games last year. Injuries are going to happen, as you suggested. There are going to be times when other teams are going big, as Nate has suggested, where he probably gets some playing time over TJ and perhaps on the court at the same time as well. And when you combine all those things, I think there's going to be an on-the-floor role for Kyle O'Quinn this year. And I think he obviously fills a large one in the locker room as well. So those are pick three, and we're talking guys that I think could make a good impact into that third unit. And while you mentioned the fact that that second unit sometimes beats the first unit in practice, I don't know so much that that happens with the third unit beating the second unit, but when you look at what the third unit is, there's so much potential on there, and I don't know if I would have made that same statement last year with the third unit. I think that group has added so much depth, added so much potential, and of course all these guys are not going to turn into regular NBA players, but you've got a few on there that even if only a couple pan out, you have to really like where that unit stands.
Time for some predictions, and I think last year we went kind of win totals and kind of tried to predict over-unders just a little bit in terms of how successful teams would be. I don't think we're going to go that route this year. Let's just kind of bounce around and kind of have the sideline guys top eight, Eastern Conference and Western Conference, if you're into that sort of thing. I should have gone back and looked to see how we fared last year. I know there are some other predictions we've made that some worked, some didn't. Last podcast, for example, I predicted that Doug McDermott would be the team's leading preseason scorer. I don't think that panned out.
No.
Yeah, neither of us picked Victor Oladipo. You know, how smart of us.
Yeah. It did end up being Victor, right?
Yeah. I mean, Victor, I said you had to play in three of the games, which he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the first two games, I think he averaged 28 points, so it was kind of a lock at that point. I just thought more time for younger players, but with only the four preseason games, there was a necessity to play your regulars quite a bit more. But as I look at one random site which has standings, it does have them listed by the preseason records. And the team that I'll pick first in the Eastern Conference was last in the preseason. The Boston Celtics were 1-3. No fear, right, that they will not start the season, you know, pretty strong. And are you thinking they're a top seed kind of team?
I do. I do think they're the favorite to be there. However, I think people are underestimating. See, I'm not going to pick this, but I think people are kind of almost locking that in as a done deal. And in my opinion, I think Toronto has every opportunity to get there. Toronto won 59 games last year, and the reason why it's Boston over Toronto for me is because I think there are very few ifs with Boston. They didn't even have Gordon Hayward last year and were very, very good, and maybe the top challenger to LeBron James and the Cavs, really, potentially along with the Pacers, once the playoffs came around. Boston has very few question marks. I think Toronto has more question marks, and that's why Boston is the answer. But Toronto won 59 games last year, and if Kawhi Leonard is healthy and if that experiment works, they go from 59 wins to getting rid of a very good player for a potentially great player. And I think people are down on Toronto because they've seen a similar story the last few years. My argument to that would be this is a completely different team with Kawhi Leonard on the floor. So I'm with you. I'm picking Boston number one, but I think some people might not be giving Toronto their due. And I think if you told me at the end of the year Toronto wins the East, it wouldn't surprise me.
So we'll go Boston 1 and we'll go Toronto 2, and yeah. I think I agree with everything that you said. Injuries obviously play a factor, so we can't really predict injuries, but I'm going to make an injury prediction, and that's going to make my number 3 the Pacers. I'm going to predict the Sixers.
Embiid?
Deal with some injuries. You know, everyone just assumes Embiid had this injury-free year last year, but what was he known for before last year? It was injuries. And if he goes down, that's just a completely different team. Let's say he just misses a month or two. I mean, that team, I think, has a very difficult time playing without him in that lineup. And even Ben Simmons. I mean, I think they're so reliant on those two players, as any team is with its superstars. I'm going to be in the camp of not believing in Markelle Fultz until I see it. And I think Ilyasova being gone, Bellinelli, that definitely changes things. Those two guys really spurred them on in the second half of the season last year. So I'm going to go Pacers 3. Everyone knows why I'm high on the Pacers.
Okay.
I guess the question would be 4, and I'm even going to go Bucks 4 over.
Okay. The Bucks are interesting because if I think the Bucks got handed the biggest gift of the offseason in Mike Budenholzer, and that situation was mismanaged by Atlanta, and because of that, Milwaukee, who had coaching struggles and all this potential but had never come to fruition, all of a sudden they've got a guy who, for all intents and purposes, appears to be one of the better coaches in the league in Mike Budenholzer. I think that's a huge advantage. I think your first tier is Boston, Toronto. I think your second tier is some combination of Philadelphia, Pacers, Bucks. Maybe
you're gonna go with me on that. You're
Wizards
gonna go Bucks over Sixers. I mean,
not gonna do it.
All right.
But I want to make a point on Embiid that I think, depending on how you want to take it, could be directly to your point or could be to the point that they could survive it. Embiid last year played what everybody considers a healthy season, but he missed 19 games in a healthy season. He missed a fourth of the year.
They started the year out not playing him back to backs,
right?
And then he had a minor injury situation.
Well, Fultz hit him
towards
the
end of the season.
Right?
I guess not really minor, but yeah, he missed the end of the year.
But the other side,
and they won those games without him.
They won the games without him. Right.
But a lot of those teams they were playing were not even trying to win.
Also,
they had a very good schedule.
That's
break.
Why it's hard to know what they are. And don't forget, Simmons has missed a full year. Markelle Fultz, his improved shot.
Just
still
put question mark. Question mark. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a kind way of saying it. I agree. He only played 31 games in 2016-2017. He missed a couple of years. He's just, unfortunately, and maybe fortunately for the Pacers, but unfortunately for the league, guys like this, they don't tend to have major injuries early on, and then all of a sudden those injuries are gone. Now, it does sometimes happen. Like Steph Curry, I think, had major injury questions early in his career.
Big guys, though.
But big guys. This is a different story. So,
You're still going to go Philly 4? Are you good with Pacers 3?
I'm good with Pacers 3. I'll go Philly 4.
Milwaukee 5?
Milwaukee 5.
All right, so we're pretty much the same. We'll switch the 4 and the 5. 6, 7, and 8 is where there is maybe some room for healthy debate. And, you know, like I said, you don't know injuries. You don't know trades. But if Miami gets Jimmy Butler, do you put them 6?
Yes. But I think it's starting to look like that might not happen.
Yeah. I don't know how to predict that. It seems like it's tough.
Let's
just keep it as it is. We won't say if anything. Washington, okay. Are you confident enough in that group?
No.
Me neither.
But you're getting to teams where you're not confident in anything, and Washington at least has probably the higher ceiling. I mean, you say the talent level of Wall, Beal, and Porter. I mean, there's tons of talent there. But still, there was tons of talent there last year. Didn't really work. They've had more disappointment than
Well, let's
positive.
Go the other way. Let's eliminate. Atlanta, out.
Yeah.
Knicks.
Out.
Orlando.
Out.
Bulls.
Out.
Okay, what do you think about Cleveland?
Cleveland, I think, is maybe the 8th seed. Right. I'm kind of okay. I'm high maybe on Cleveland, which is weird to say. I think most people, LeBron, they're done. But I think Love will be better by him without – I think Love is one of those guys that will be better without LeBron. I like Colin Sexton. I think they still have some decent pieces around, and I think the East has enough.
I'm gonna go Cleveland out, and okay. I'm gonna go out in a big way. And I think you're gonna know the first month or so of the season how it's going to go with Cleveland. I think they could be the kind of team, given the fact that they've already had so much success, that if it doesn't start decent, then they just trade people and they, you know, go for ping pong balls. And you don't even have to be as bad now to have a good chance in the lottery. I just think they'll see quickly that they are not going to be competing for anything in the Eastern Conference, and they'll start to make their players available via trade. I'm going to say Cleveland out, even though they are a trendy pick for 8. So I'm going to go Washington, Miami in there, and then we're just kind of looking for that extra team. My extra team is going to be Charlotte. I think a couple of years ago they were a much better team. I still believe in Kemba Walker as being kind of that next-level kind of superstar. If they stay healthy, coaching change, I really liked Coach Clifford, and so now I'm not – as convinced, although you've got the Spurs culture now trying to start up in Charlotte. But I'll say Charlotte as my 8. So my 6, 7, 8, I think I'm going to go Miami 6, Washington 7, Charlotte 8.
I'll go Washington 6. And then it gets hard. We're definitely discussing. I think Washington.
Brooklyn would be the other team I would consider in the 8, 9.
Yeah. So you're totally out on Detroit.
Oh, you know, that's a tough one.
I don't know what to do with them. I could see the case where Dwayne Casey comes in. I think he's a good coach, figures it out. They're kind of weird in that their two best players are the 4 and the 5, which typically doesn't yield a ton of success. But Griffin is a good player. Drummond is a good player.
You put a lot in Reggie Jackson,
No,
right?
I don't like Reggie Jackson. That's the problem. If you don't like the point guard, it's tough to like the team. But I do think there's a scenario where—
I like them when they had Tobias Harris better than when they don't have him.
Yeah. I do think there's a scenario, though, where Casey figures how to make those two guys work. Because the closest guy in the NBA to DeAndre Jordan is Andre Drummond. So maybe there's something there. The issue is the backcourt. I mean, Stanley Johnson doesn't look like, you know, he's going to pan out to be a top player. Reggie Jackson puts up numbers, but I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of his. Okay, I'll go. I'm going to put Detroit.
Detroit's
in
a good pick.
I'll go 6 Washington, 7 Detroit, 8 Cleveland.
I like it. I could actually put Detroit back in there. And the other one that I want to keep an eye on, in the same realm that I said Cleveland, watch how they start. Let's watch how Washington starts. Mm-hmm. You know, Dwight Howard, initially then there was an injury. Maybe he might miss a month. Now they're saying maybe he, I think, is ready opening night or at least soon thereafter. If they don't start with a successful, you know, first month or two, do they decide finally to break up the Beal and Wall situation? I just think there's a lot of pressure on them to have a good start to the year. And if they're, you know, at Christmas, 3 games under .500, I think they could be a team that could look significantly different by the end of the year. So I'm not confident just giving Washington the lock for a playoff spot. We'll spend just a little bit of time here on the Western Conference. This is an extended podcast, but let's just go down the list. Golden State 1.
Yeah.
Houston 2.
Yep.
Utah.
Okay, I'm gonna buck the national the everyone trend here, and I'm gonna say
I said it with
like
a
Utah.
Question mark. I was just kind of guessing what you might say. I'm not sure that I'm on the Utah either.
I'm off Utah.
Okay,
I just think the Western Conference is so good, and I like Donovan Mitchell, and I like Quinn Snyder, and I like Rudy Gobert, but I'm not sure there's enough playmaking there, and I think the Western Conference has too much playmaking. So I'm going to actually say this is a very unpopular pick, and I'm aware that Utah is going to take a drop this year and that they're going to be more like 7 or 8.
I can see it. And Gobert, you know, we talked about big guys getting hurt. He was hurt last season, they were a completely different team. So who's your third pick if we can confidently say Golden State 1 and Houston 2?
Let me see if I want to put them where I do, because what I'm about to do is going to anger some people. And it's also going to be unpopular. I kind of like Oklahoma City.
Okay.
Here's why I like Oklahoma City. I think they have a second year of – I think it was very tough with all those guys coming together the first year. I think Carmelo Anthony is going to be addition by subtraction. I think they made a couple of sneaky offseason moves that were really solid. Dennis Schroeder is now going to be a backup point guard for them, which I think he's better than most backup point guards. I really like what Steven Adams is in the middle. They should be getting Robertson back, I think, for at least a good chunk of the season, and they kind of fell apart defensively without him. They got Nerlens Noel also. You know, they could have a second unit that has Schroeder, has Noel, has Patrick Patterson, and I think with Carmelo out of the equation, I think, you know, Paul George is not Kevin Durant, but I think they kind of get back to where that kind of style was with Westbrook and Durant and that two-headed monster and everybody else is down. So I know this is not a popular choice, and I think I may regret it, but I'll pick Oklahoma City there.
Okay. I never like to make a conventional pick, and I don't know where this kind of fits in the equation, but I'm going to go with the Pelicans, although I just looked at their preseason scores, and granted, it's just the preseason. Lost to the Hawks by 14, lost to the Knicks by 6, lost to the Heat, gave up 140 points, and gave up 134 to the Raptors. So maybe they're not starting the season with the confidence that they ended the postseason. I mean, that sweep to me over Portland was very impressive, and I do believe enough in Anthony Davis if he stays healthy, always a qualifier, that he can be a significant difference maker. And I guess maybe I'm just down on some other teams, or maybe I'm just not as high on some other teams. I'm not as high on the Lakers. I'm going to give them a 6 or a 7 seed. I'm going to have to believe it to see it. But I'm going to go Pelicans 3, and I'm going to go Nuggets 4. I think this is a talented team. And if you look last year, and you throw the Timberwolves into there, the teams that were 3rd through 9th were separated by like 1 or 2 games. So the Nuggets were not far from being the 4 seed a year ago. I'm going to go Nuggets 4, and I'll throw OKC in 5, so you can go with your 4-5.
What's funny with doing this exercise is the Western Conference was clearly the better conference, and then LeBron goes there, and you know everybody says, oh, you know, it's now their dominant better conference, and yet I'm looking at a lot of these teams, though, and I still have question marks.
Yeah.
And maybe more than the teams had last year. I like the Denver pick. Let's see. So I have OKC at 3. I like the New Orleans pick, too. I actually think that Randall fits that role much better than Cousins did, and I think that could work really well. They got better when Cousins went out, and clearly that's just a – in today's NBA, your best two players can't be 4 and 5s. But Randall, I think, is a much better complementary piece to Davis. I like that pick. I'll go with New Orleans at 4 and Denver at 5.
And so neither of us has taken Portland. Do you
see them? I'm thinking them at 6.
6. Okay. And I'll go Portland at 6 as well. Or wait, did I already say? Yeah, Portland at 6. I said Lakers 7. I'm going to go Spurs 8. That leaves Minnesota.
Wait, did you pick
Utah? Oh. Whoa. All right.
Yeah, this is tough.
Did not pick Utah. I'm going to go Utah at 6.
Okay. One of those three teams you just named has to miss the playoffs. That's kind of the first time I realized that.
All right, breaking news. The Lakers miss the playoffs.
Okay. I'm not going to pick the LeBron James team to miss the playoffs.
Blazers 7, Jazz 6. How about that? Jazz 6.
Okay.
Everything else fits. I got OKC in there, right, at 5. Yeah. Denver 4. Yep.
Okay.
Pels at 3. No Laker playoffs.
I'm going to say the Lakers make it. I'm going to say they're the 7. Portland's the 6, and Utah's the 8, and San Antonio misses.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I think that the Lakers are not built very well for the regular season. I think it's going to be tough for LeBron James to carry them that long. I think there's not enough talent around him to compete with the tough Western Conference. But if you're Houston, do you want to play LeBron James in the first round? I mean, that's going to be a fascinating storyline if they end up where I think they are. I think they're going to be 6-8, and I think that is a terrifying first-round matchup. I know they're not even Cleveland.
The only one who's probably not terrified is Golden State, right?
Yeah, probably. And if it's Houston, L.A., 2-7.
And we're also dismissing the Clippers. I don't know what to think of them.
Yeah.
And the Timberwolves.
Too? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they figure out the Butler thing. It looks like he's going to play.
Memphis, Dallas, Sacramento, Phoenix. You're just kind of saying wait till 2020.
Yeah, and we do need to wrap this up. But one thing I do want to say about Memphis, I think that's a team that could be drastically underrated. They were so bad last year because they had so many injuries. But this team still has Conley and Gasol, and they're on topic because that's who the Pacers have on Wednesday. They still have Conley and Gasol, and Gasol's a little past his prime. Conley's a little past his prime. These are two really good players. If Jackson comes in immediately and has production, I'm not going to pick Memphis to make the playoffs, but the Pacers are not playing, in my opinion, a top five lottery team. They're playing a team that could win 40 games, I think. And this to me is a tough opening matchup. It's not playing one of the top teams in the West, but I think people are overlooking Memphis.
Yeah, I don't think the Pacers will overlook them, and I'm as interested as any to see kind of the style that Memphis plays with Conley and Gasol. I mean, at times you used to think about them as grit and grind and a slowdown game. And you remember the season opener last year against Brooklyn was at 140-133 Pacers with the win. And we thought that would be the start of this kind of up and down style. It didn't really translate over the course of the season, but I will be really interested to see the kind of pace that the opener is played with and really to see Mike Conley, to see what he has left, how healthy is he, and see how he worked with Gasol. You know, it's a tough matchup for the Pacers inside, even though they have those two bigs, Gasol and Miles. Miles has had, you know, some difficulty with Gasol over the years, I believe. So, it is a fascinating early season matchup and really an entertaining but chance for success in week one. When you've got Memphis at home, you expect to win that game. I mean, it's not a given, but you still go into the home opener against Memphis with all the momentum, all the continuity, the great chemistry. You expect to win that game. You're fired up for Friday night in Milwaukee to see the Bucks open that new arena and try to kind of, you know, rain on their parade just a little bit. Maybe fans will be thinking about a Brewers playoff game. Same night, game 6 could be Friday night in Milwaukee. So that town is liable to be off the chains. And then Saturday night back here against Brooklyn. So I don't know the combinations, but you know, a realistic thought is you take Sunday off and you're 2-1.
I think so, and I think 2-1 is what you should aim for. The Pacers' schedule after the first three gets a lot tougher. And so to me, these first two home games are important. I don't want to sit here and say three games are really important over an 82-game season, but I do think it's important the Pacers get off to a strong start here, because you don't want 1-2 or even, heaven forbid, 0-3 as you're getting into a big road trip that, off the top of my head, includes Minnesota, I think, and San Antonio on that. So the beginning part of the schedule, the first three games are very doable, and then it gets pretty tough for a stretch, and they leave the field house for a while. And then their home games coming out of that, that's that stretch where they have Sixers and Houston and Boston. So not the easiest early part of the schedule. It all, of course, evens out. But I look at these first three games as maybe a little more important than I did in previous years.
It's six of the first nine away from Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but two of the first three at home. So you can kind of do the math and know that the second and third week of the season, you're going to be living out of suitcases for quite a bit. And there's really no reason not to start successfully. I mean, you put this team together, and one of the reasons when the schedule came out you're okay with it being tough early is – you don't have to, you know, have guys get to know each other as much. They know each other. They know the system. You've got a few new faces. You're healthy. I mean, everything is there for this team to have early season success despite a tough schedule. So, you know, we won't be making any excuses for them. I think they would not want any excuses made for them. And there's really no reason to even discuss that, because I do think they're going to get off to a good start. And it all starts Wednesday night. Like to remind everyone, 1 hour special Pacers Live preseason or pregame for the season opener, I should say. It's kind of like a preseason preview, even though we already had a season preview show that you can still catch, I believe, the 30 minutes before the Pacers Live pregame show. So set your DVRs if you'd like, 5:30 to 6, the taped show that we've already done, and then live Pacers Live 6 to 7, and then the game, and then all of the normal cast and characters that you've hopefully grown to love will be on the air.
Yeah, and that's what those are the couple things I wanted to hit with you on. So the hour-long pregame show starting at 6 on Wednesday, the Pacers preview show on Fox Sports Indiana from the radio side. Pacers Weekly was underway. The season premiere was last Saturday. Jeremiah, as always, is a part of that, along with Chris Denary, Mark Boyle, Mark Monteith, Eddie White. The whole crew chimes in over the course of the hour. That's 10 to 11 every Saturday morning on 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FM, and then the website 1070thefan.com is where you can stream it. We randomly give away tickets from time to time on that show, so you never know what you have the chance to win, and we'd love to have you as well for that. This podcast will be going on throughout the year from our radio coverage perspective. Pre-game show coverage with every game, including the opener, will be 30 minutes before. Mark Boyle, Slick Leonard, and Eddie Gill will have the call this year. And Eddie White will be back for the post-game show. So that's your radio coverage. And if you're listening to this before the opener, I'm not sure if the deal is still there, but one of the better deals I think we've had in a while on our tickets page is that if you buy a six-game pack, which I think is a great number if you've got a family and a lot going on but still want to catch the Pacers, if you buy a six-game pack, they're throwing an opening night for free right now on Pacers.com/tickets. I think the actual site for that is Pacers.com/free. So if you're listening to this in time while that deal is still available, that's a good one to take advantage of, I think. And I was looking at the tickets page for that Memphis game. It looks like it's going to sell out, which is pretty cool to have on an opener and have on a Wednesday, which obviously is not the easiest night to get fans in the building. So I'm expecting a really, really good atmosphere on Wednesday.
And we should remind everyone, it's not just opening night. This is Pacers opening weekend. So there are festivities really all week. And even including the road game on Friday at Milwaukee, there's a Pacers viewing party at Scotty's Brew House. And I think for both the Wednesday night game and the Saturday night game, there's a Pacers kind of sponsored bar crawl. I invite you to act responsibly if you are participating in that. And then one thing that I'm still on the fence about, I didn't get an official invite, but I still might show up, is the Pacers 5K Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Bird is the official starter. And I know Eddie Gill, I think, is running, Scott Pollard as well. It'll be tough because we get back from Milwaukee pretty late on Friday night, and it is the back-to-back. My son, wife, and mother-in-law are participating in Pacers 5K downtown. I wanted to just wrap up as I was listening to your final thoughts. I got an email from Adam Silver, which I think a number of people can...
A direct email to you.
Well, it says...
Hi,
subject
Jeremiah.
Line tip-off is here, dear Jeremiah.
Yeah, there. See, told you.
But I think it's the email marketing.
Oh, you don't think he typed it?
No, I don't. But I'll read it to you. It's pretty
you never
concise.
Know.
Tonight we tip off the 73rd season of the NBA with great anticipation and excitement. We will watch some of the game's biggest stars perform on new teams and bounce back from serious injuries. We will see who has a breakthrough year, how rookies, first-time head coaches, and established coaches in new places will make their marks. And after 8 months of the toughest basketball competition in the world, we will find out who emerges as NBA champions. There is a lot that is special about basketball, including what the above video, which I cannot show, but you can find it, from the offseason shows. A love of the game that brings people together. For that and so much more, we are grateful for your support and hope you enjoy what is expected to be another memorable NBA season. We thank you, Pacer fans, for your support. We look forward to this season from a blue and gold perspective and cannot wait to get things started on Wednesday.
And I'm going to make this comment, one final thing to add on to that, and I'm talking the whole NBA here. Let's have a pretty injury-free opening weekend. The first 5 minutes of opening night was a little bit spoiled by Gordon Hayward's unfortunate injury last year. No matter who the team is, even if it's a rival of the Pacers, here's to a hopefully a relatively injury-free. You're going to have injuries, but I'm talking, I don't want to see that major kind of thing happen again. It was a little bit of a black eye on the opener, unfortunately, last year.
Yeah, looking forward to tonight's games and echo those sentiments. Keep the trainers a little less busy this season.
All right, he's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We hope you enjoyed this extended version of the Sideline Guys podcast. If you are new to the podcast, we'll be with you about once a week. Throughout the season, Jeremiah Johnson travels. He'll join us on the road very often throughout the year and get your perspective throughout the entire Pacers season. As always, we love you to rate the show on iTunes and on all the various channels as well. And if you have comments, questions, feel free to shoot them to our Twitter account, JJFSIndiana, and at Pat Boylan Pacers on Twitter is where you can find us. We'll report to you back. Have another show coming up next week. The Pacers will be at least three or four games into their season, and we'll have some significant things to talk about. Until then, we hope to see you at the Fieldhouse. If not, hope to have you as part of our television and our radio coverage this season.